Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up, and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you Once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions. Took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon, that was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church, get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with them.
All right, today's podcast, originally I was going to do like a trending topics and pick up from yesterday, which we might do before the end of the podcast, but because yesterday we were talking about the tribes, tribalism, and identity marketing. And I had that under trending topics, and then I was on YouTube and heard a guy go off on a rant. There's a black guy I've invited him on this podcast right now. I don't know if he'll call into it. But there's a black dude that, and he's into sustainability and owning land and entrepreneurship and even tiny houses. But I'm going to see if I can get him on here. So I'd rather have you hear from him. But anyway, so he inspired me. I changed from trending topics for today to black folks and the American dream. One of the things that this guy was ranting about on YouTube this morning, matter of fact, just a few minutes ago. Matter of fact, he still might be on there. Was that, and I quote, he says he's done messing with the majority of black folk because he is basically tired of the hyper-consumerism, some, not all, that some blacks, and maybe on a critical basis, that African-Americans do. Now, first thing, Americans, on a critical mass basis, we're a nation of, in my opinion, hyper-consumers. That's across the board, black, white, yellow, green, brown, across the board on a critical mass basis, not everybody, but on a critical mass basis, we're a nation of consumers, hyper-consumers, all right? We even judge people on how much they consume. Interesting. Now, in Asia and parts of Europe, particularly Germany, the mindset's different. How much can you produce? Manufacture, that type of thing. Anyway, but so thus the title of today's podcast, Black Folks and the American Dream. Now, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, I think he said the American Dream back during his time period was a house, one house, modest-sized house, and a chicken in every pot. I think that was the American dream under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was elected four times president of the United States. Okay. However, today, from my point of view, and I'm just one person out of 7 billion or so people, maybe close to knocking at the door of 8 billion, I think the American dream is hyper-consumption. And that's across the board on a critical mass basis. Has nothing to do with race, color, or whatever, but we're a nation of hyper-consumers. We, not all, but many of us, I'll put it that way, many of us, I don't know what the percentage is, many of us, we eat too much, causes health problems. So we got some health problems, we go to the doctor, we get prescription medication, and then some of the people that are prescribed medicine for whatever else, and a root cause of that illness was hyper-consumption of food and drink. And I'm not even talking about illegal substances yet, but just legal stuff that you can eat and drink. So, you know, we might have high blood pressure, obesity, whatever. The root cause of it, in my opinion, hyper-consumption of food and drink. Then if we get into the hospital, or not hospital, illegal substances. No. Prescription substances, legal prescriptions. Then we might abuse those through hyper-consumption. typically the houses that we rent or buy are bigger than what we actually need, another sign of, or another symptom, rather, of hyperconsumption. It was a time in this country where on the critical mass basis, okay, people didn't take out a mortgage to own a home because they had the skill set to build their own homes. Today, we're going into 2022 here soon. We are, you know what, we see something, we want it, and if we got the credit score, we'll buy it. But most of the people, you know what, if you got to take out a loan that large for whatever that might be, a mortgage, mortgages and institutional finance credit, to a high degree, not in all cases, but to a high degree, are for broke people. Now, you might not be broke and destitute, but, you know, Robin's not around this morning, but Akon said it. If you're going to buy a $100,000 house, because he has a thing called the 10% rule, entertainer or singer slash rapper, Akon, A-K-O-N, his rule is it's got to be, he makes no purchase larger than 10% of what he has in the bank. So, for instance, if he ran across, or let's say you run across a house that the selling price is $100,000. But if, according to Akon's rule of 10%, if you don't have, or if he doesn't have, or you don't have 10% of that, in the bank, excuse me, 10 times that in the bank, in other words, $1 million. The only way that he would purchase a $100,000 house is that he would have to have $1 million in the bank. 10% of $1 million is $100,000. I think that's very prudent. Now, another way to go about it is, and that's why I play the solar cabin here so much, build what you can afford. Lamar Alexander with Solar Cabin, he built out of pocket his little solar cabin for $2,000. Now, if you build it and you don't have to get a mortgage on it, all right, you build it with no mortgage, $2,000, you don't need, now, in his case, let's use Akon's rule again. Okay. Lamar decided to build a house, not buy a house. If he were to buy a house, then he would need at least $20,000 in the bank. But he built this house with no mortgage, and since he built it, he knows how to maintain it better than the average person. So if anything goes wrong with his house, and things do go wrong with houses all the time, he has the skill set, with the maintenance skill set, you know, to make the repairs and keep it up. Whereas, and you know what, his skill set is worth $20,000 liquid. Actually, it's worth more than that. Now, Lamar also has a solar electric system on the house that he paid about $3,000 for. So once again, now let's say if he were to buy a solar cabin, according to Akon's 10% rule, he would need $50,000 in the bank. Because anything less than that, you really couldn't afford to hold on to it. But Lamar Alexander built his, total $5,000. So he's got the skill sets to bring him in $50,000. But in any event, the question of the day is, have black folks what's the right word I'm trying to find here? Have black folks, I found it. Have black folks embrace the American dream more than white folks or any other American? Have black, on a critical mass basis, I think we have, not all of us, but many of us. And once again, the American dream is hyper consumption. Because if you look at some of these music videos that, you know, people put out, you know, which is shot at mansions, even in the movies, shot at Uber, you know, mansions, you see professional athletes with, I mean, Uber large mansions, entertainers, MC Hammer, he had a mansion, which... But you know what? I don't think he followed the 10% rule. So what do you think? Have black folks bought into the American dream more than other ethnic groups in the United States? I'll put it that way. Let's see. And once again, that's not on, because I don't get into that hyper consumption. In any event, we'll be right back.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Yo, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man, we was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday, you know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. So on me. I had that kid in my sights, close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
He a man today. He a man.
Did you prime it? That little rubber ball right there next to the spark plug.
Gotta push it in 3 times before you try to start it. Gets the gas going to the car.
You want the truth? I ain't never used one of these. Never had no call to.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick you up for your landscaping skills. All these Spanish, they on paper too. Only use people like y'all. Sometimes it comes back on me, sometimes it works out fine.
Well, how long you been uptown?
10 years.
Hotter than a motherfucker out here.
Yeah, it's hot. Every day. You gonna be riding in the back of that hard truck, bouncing around. Every day. And your back's gonna be yelling at you. Every day. I used to drive an SL. Pretty gold convertible. Nice rims. I don't even think on that car no more.
You put it behind you, huh?
Some can't. I'm just saying. You want to stay on the straight. Ain't going to be no big reward to it. This is it, right here. Prime that bitch 3 times. She'll start right up.
It ain't like stepping on ass, Jake. Takes a man to kill. You man enough to kill, Jake? Hit me right there. Get me, Jack. Get me. Hit me. Hit me. You can't do it. Somebody drop this fool for me.
You got us twisted, homie. You gotta put your own work in around here.
It's like that, Bone?
It's like that.
Player to player, pimp to pimp. I'm believe you shoot me, nigga. Don't do it. Don't do it. Now I'm believe he got it in me, Jay. I'm gonna get that gun, and then I'm gonna get that money. And you ain't gonna do a damn thing, because you ain't gonna shoot no cop in the back, are you?
Don't do it.
You know what they give you for that? The gas chamber. You know what the gas chamber smells like? Pine oil. That's where you headed, boy. To pine oil heaven. I'm gonna get that gun, and then I'm gonna get that money. I don't believe you got it in you, Jake. I'm gonna go get it right now.
Oh, shit! Ah, you motherfucker!
The next one will kill you.
Oh, son of a bitch. You shot me in the ass. Okay, wait. Okay. All right, look. Come on, Jake, I need the money. Give me the money, Jake. Give me the money, please, Jake. Give me that money!
It's not gonna happen.
Oh, you gonna jack me now? You gonna take my own money from me, huh?
I told you, that's my evidence. You wanna go to jail, you wanna go home.
I wanna go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home.
Yeah? You want to go home?
Yeah, let me go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home. Give me the money and let me go home. Let me go home, Jake. That's right. Come on, Jake. You don't deserve this. Okay, you motherfucker.
Jake, go ahead and bounce on me. Get up out of here. We got your back.
What?
Like that.
Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you did. Hey, Jay! Hey! Jay! 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 Come back here! Jay! You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk. Jay! I need my money! Jake! Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jake! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not, and I will leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Yeah, then I'll jump back in. And now I'm gonna step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question just because I'm not going to sit here and say every single African American side either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking, you said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African Americans. Feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or you didn't grow up like I did. Like I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah. I mean, let's be real. Yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it.
Anybody gonna say nothing?
I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression. That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state. Is we're at this stage in 2020. We're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but and that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation, so I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard's going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about, statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about landowners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth.
Yeah.
You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, "Do we play the victim?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, this is what I can do with what I have been allotted or whatever my place in life is? Are we playing the victim is the question.
I think we have to define play the victim.
Okay.
I think we are victims.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are. I think we are factually a victim.
So all races
so
can
what,
be victims.
What do we call in playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim, like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for
play,
you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
or
to me.
Or always complaining.
That's what I hear.
Always complaining
that's what
about
I hear
our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing a victim to me.
This is what I
and
hear.
And that's not the case to me.
This
you know
is what
I mean?
I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead. You should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm gonna stop right there.
Yeah,
that's what
so,
I. That's what it. That's what it triggers in my head.
So, to say like we can't. I don't think you can outrule or like just say, hey, we're some black people aren't playing the victim because people. Everyone uses excuses,
correct.
And people can be using excuse playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, and like you said, like we weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth, and without that opportunity. We don't own anything, so we are having to kind of look for employment, like at wherever you work. And even you said there's one person at D1 that's black. And we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore, we may not be playing a victim, but we're getting hurt in corporate America or wherever part of life.
Yeah, that's kind of just statistics. I'm
going
to agree with him. You know, I also don't like the term playing the victim because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we, I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, you know, the things that we've seen and been through. I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you'll be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were either wrongly accused or wrongly criticized or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. it's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I was to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970, like the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like there are people alive still, like you know what I mean, who went through segregation that are still alive. Like it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, you know, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of
this.
And
then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's right.
That's not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what I'm saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon.
Yeah.
Because
so
of what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember, like, Booker T. Washington, like, the 1890s, to kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying, hey, I'm that old, right? I'm a historian.
He said basically...
Is my gray showing that much, though, for real?
No, I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience, because this is, what, 130 years later for him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that will create our own system of wealth. But, I mean, you're only, like you say, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I'd kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You can talk many
hours. I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop, too, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught, don't work. I'll just be honest, my father, don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you could take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. That was out. Go get your own brand. Raise your family. Give your brand to your family. Mm. Let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught.
Mm.
And that's the way I got to keep it moving.
Okay.
Rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically, what I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing the victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Has that experience kind of helped you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something, that you're not. So if I was to, like, go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together, and you know, one of them yelled, hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby. you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I feel like. Like, we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence to make our name great. That somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that the enslavement.
Yeah.
Has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers to unite, you know, that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us.
Yeah.
instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to do, to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are. Mm. And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what we are, what are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we and my wife also try to do and spread, right? You know, we're all about giving back. We're all about showing and proving. You know, I want to be that beacon that this young brother say, you know what? I want to do what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and get my own wealth. I want to start my own business. And if I wasn't there, maybe he didn't see me. Maybe they never came to my restaurant. Maybe it's just me, you know, but when you're there, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you tools. We're going to teach you about customer service. We're going to teach you how to run a restaurant because that's what we have to do. It's my duty. I have to teach. And again, I can only speak about me. I can't save the world. Yeah. I can save the people that watch me. I can save the people that touch me. I can save the people that work for me. I do my best, right? You know, so, you know, I just look at it as you have to be that beacon, right? You got to be that shining light to change everything around you. You know, be that leading example.
But I don't think that's anything new under the sun, what you're saying.
No, it's not new.
I think that's what this community has been. You know, it has been a community of people who say, I'll teach you how to do this.
What community are you talking about?
The Black community. Has gone, I have plenty of examples in my life of people who stuck their foot in the door so that I could pass through.
That's not always out the way we do things, though. You know.
I'm not a victim, and this country don't owe me anything. Slavery was a legal transaction. Nobody in Europe or nobody in this country had any right or any reason to abolish slavery if they didn't want to. The reason why it was abolished is because people fought for it. It's not because somebody owed them something. It's because they fought for it. The reason why I'm where I'm at today is because I fought for it. Not because somebody owed me something, not because somebody gave me a handout. If anybody gives anything to me, whether it's the abolishment of slavery or it's to give me a job, it's because I earned that job. I deserve that job. Because I work for that job. I give the person who has the power of the thing that I feel that I want, I give them no choice but to believe that I'm the best candidate on the market. Listen, when I was a police officer, when I signed up for the police department, when I went through the academy, I didn't expect anybody to give me a handout because I was Black. Oh, because historically, police don't look like me. There's not enough people in the class that I can identify with. I don't need your sympathy. I don't need your affirmative action. I took that job by the reins and I went hard. I worked out hard. I took the test. I studied for my test. I did everything that I can do to succeed, and I gave them no choice but to hire me. Not because they had to, because I earned it. I earned it. Everything I do, I earn it. And I honestly believe that we young people, we got to get this in our minds. I don't want to hear about racism no more. I don't want to hear about slavery anymore. I don't want to hear about discrimination anymore. See, there's only one thing when it comes to privilege that I believe in, and that's Christ's privilege. I have the privilege of Jesus Christ. That supersedes white privilege, financial privilege, economic privilege, historical privilege, That supersedes everything. See, God has the power to put me in a position that God wants me to be in. And I don't care who you are, where you come from, what color skin you have, how much money you have in a bank account. If God wants it for me, it's going to happen inevitably. And there's nothing that a man can do to stop that. So it's time to stop talking about white privilege. What are you referring to? White people don't owe you nothing. What are you referring to? White people don't owe you nothing. You go out and get it. You do the right thing to get it. You have compassion. Nobody have to give you compassion. You're supposed to have that in your heart. That will determine whether you succeed or fail. And a lot of y'all are missing that. And I just want to share this very, very basic message with you about being accountable for your own actions, about not looking for a handout, looking for an excuse of being a victim. I'm not a victim of anything. If any victimhood happens upon me, it's because of me. I'm a victim of my own failures. I'm a victim of me not working hard enough. I'm a victim of me not applying myself hard enough. I'm a victim of not making them hire me because I'm the best doggone candidate that they ever seen. And if they don't hire me, I'm a victim of not going to the next job and the next job and busting my butt to make sure I have a job to feed my family. I'm a victim of my own responsibility. I'm sick of people calling us victims. I'm sick of people thinking that we're victims and we want handouts. I don't want your handout. If anything, I'm going to work hard and show you that I'm worth a hand up. I'm going to work hard and show you that I'm worth a hand up, not a handout. I don't need your minimum wage. I'm going to work hard enough where that employer is going to be forced to give me a raise. It's going to look at my work ethic and say, man, oh my God, I got to get this man a raise. I have to get this man a promotion. I cannot afford not to promote him to a position of leadership. Why? Because he works so hard. Because he's so valuable. Not because I owe it to him. It's because he put in the work for it. Listen, in this life, man, everybody don't get a participation trophy. There's winners and there's losers. What side are you on? And if you win, you can thank God and you can look at your efforts and say, this is what it took to win. If you lose, thank God and look in the mirror and say, this is what caused me to lose. What can I do to make this better? What can I do to grow my brand? What can I do to grow my abilities? To next time, I'll be the winner. This is what young people need to hear from leadership. I don't want to hear LeBron James. I don't want to hear none of these guys. And I love them. I think they're great people. But I think they're giving us the wrong message. I don't want to hear them talk about, oh, when you black, you always, you know, you're going to forever be. No, you're not. No, you're not. He lying to you. He good at basketball, but he lying to you. He lying to you. You're a victim of what? As long as you're alive, you can be whatever you want to be. Only in America. You go somewhere else, I can't tell you what's going to happen to you. But in America, you work hard, you can be all you can be. Like they said, you can be all you can be in the Army Reserve. You can be all you can be. All you got to do is put in the work. And I guarantee you any...
Black America is potentially the most dangerous group of humans alive today. Dangerous to who? Dangerous to the corporate empire, Illuminati, imperial scum, whatever you want to call them, white supremacists.
White supremacy is the problem. You just happen to be white.
How much of the problems in the black community are the blacks' own fault?
Well, white supremacy is the main problem in our community. If we
How much of the problems are your own fault?
Excuse me. If we resolve white supremacy, we will resolve the problems of unemployment. We will resolve the problems of bad housing. The Reagan administration probably represented the epitome of white supremacy by cutting into every domestic livable program that whites and blacks had, especially poor people, and they showed their relationship with these people by proving their insensitivity.
Now, well, Mr. Congress.
And the reason they're dangerous is because they're quite easily united. It might seem not true because there's so much division within black people in America, but the only reason they're divided is because the corporate empire spent billions of dollars keeping them divided because they are potentially dangerous.
Mr. Coakley, you've attacked Jesse Jackson, you attacked the late Mayor Harold Washington, you called them colorless. What black leaders, political leaders in this country do you respect?
Well, I think politics has a way of accommodation. I don't think we have true political leaders in the sense of that you're going to find purity in politics. Politics is about accommodation and compromise. When our black leaders go into politics, as was discussed recently in Harper's Magazine, blacks have to prove to whites that they will protect their interests first. That's why politics is not the type of game that we're going to continue to invest all our time in, because it's proven that it doesn't work. Politics will not whip white supremacy. But clear, accurate, documented challenges to white supremacy, as well as action, grassroots action, taken against the forces of white supremacy.
What makes them dangerous? Well, 45 million people united in the U.S. would be very dangerous. What kind of things is dangerous? Well, you might think I'm talking about protesting or getting together and rallying and that kind of stuff. Well, no, that's not the kind of danger I'm talking about. 45 million people united could do some serious damage to the financial market. Serious damage to the financial market. Serious damage to the financial market.
So I'm dark-skinned with an accent, and when you had an accent back then, Africans, well, it wasn't that many Africans in America then. It was mostly Jamaicans. So you had an accent, you automatically Jamaican.
Right.
Africans, well, it wasn't that many Africans in America then. It was mostly Jamaicans.
You have to be logical. If I know that in this hotel room they have food every day, and I'm knocked on the door every day, to eat, and they open the door, let me see the flowing food around, but they're telling me there's no food in here. Every day, I'm standing outside trying to sing my way in. We are hungry, please let us in. We are hungry, please let us in. After about a week, that song is going to change to, we hungry, we need some food. After 2-3 weeks, it's like, give me all the food, ragging out the door. After a year, then you're just like, I'm picking the lock, coming through the door, blasting. We asked 10 years ago. We was asking with the Panthers. We was asking with them, you know, the civil rights movement. We was asking, you know, now those people that were asking, they're all dead and in jail. So now what do you think we're going to do?
What that was all about, the revolution will not be televised. That was about the fact that the first change that takes place is in your mind. You have to change your mind before you change the way you live and the way you move. So when we said that the revolution would not be televised, we were saying that, like, the thing that's going to change people is something that no one will ever be able to capture on film. It'll just be something that you see, and all of a sudden you realize, I'm on the wrong page, or I'm on the right page, but I'm on the wrong note. And I've got to get in sync with everyone else to understand what's happening in this country.
To watch all of my exclusive content not featured here on my channel, log on to my website at imjustheretomakeyouthink.com/fumes. In today's society of America, millions of people of all complexions are still undergoing the effects of a variety of dominant social engineering experiments, which just so happens to play a prominent role among their everyday lives unknowingly. Not only that, there are in fact particular prominent groups of people that have set the mandatory rules and regulations that all American citizens must abide by, still to this very day. And when it specifically comes to the so-called African Americans, or rather the descendants of the copper-colored indigenous people who occupied all of the now American lands pre-colonial times, the experimental methodologies are deeply rooted, especially physically and mentally, by way of things such as industrialism, environmental racism, compulsory education, manipulative indoctrination, paper genocide, and eugenics. However, I would like for you to note that the freedom of having life is like a seed. It cannot grow on its own and become a plant unless the climate changes environmentally. Now, many of you can recall hearing the phrase, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I agree with it to a certain extent, because even though you may be doing great right now, you should always make room for improvements, or rather changes, because It's better to be prepared than repaired after the damage is already done. Which brings me to my very first point of this segment, and that is, why are people of color in America considered to be the biggest threat throughout American society? Now, this question alone would be continuously answered throughout this video and my other correlating documentaries, because of how much detailed information is critically important to note when answering this question. This era can be traced all the way back to the late 1700s and very early 1800s, at a time when white African and European colonizationalists, or rather kidnappers, were afraid of the threat of being murdered by the so-called coloreds, or rather the indigenous people of North America, due to the multiple Indian raids, rebellions, documented and undocumented wars rapidly occurring during this time period. This is also the very same time period where these kidnappers demanded that the Negroes be removed from the lands of America and shipped away to newly established American colonized lands in Africa along the coast. Multiple religious societies campaigned for this idea to become a reality, especially the Catholics and the Quakers, just to name a few. But the ball began to roll once John Lynch wrote a letter to the president. According to records held by the National Archives, in a letter to then former President Thomas Jefferson, dated December 25, 1810, John Lynch, who colonized lands he named after himself called Lynchburg, Virginia, made a descriptive proposition to Thomas Jefferson that called for the, quote, colonization of the Nigger people on the coast of Africa so that a settlement can be established for immigrating the freed people of color out of North America and into Africa somewhere along the coast. In my documentary called African American Slaves in West Africa, History Books Are Lying, Part 2, I shared much detailed informative information in relation to what really happened in American history. I exposed that we were all led to believe that our ancestors were stolen from parts of West Africa and then shipped to the Americas, when in reality, that information was told to us all in reverse. Some of our ancestors were forcefully relocated from southern east lands of North America to lands west of the Mississippi River, and also along the coast of Africa, and especially South and West Africa. I highly recommend that you watch that video, for it is critically important for the sake of our real documented history. Now, another side of this era would be allowing the people of color to think freely, being as though English was not our ancestors' original language to begin with. The early European and African colonizationalists implemented manipulative methods to force their own traditions, language, and cultures, just to name a few, upon our ancestors mentally, which in turn rapidly obstructed our ancestors' well-being physically, systematically. This method was also purposely designed to decimate their literacy and critical thinking capabilities, along with quelling the thoughts of retaliation by fear-mongering, allowing for this social engineering format of eugenics to prevail from generation to generation, affecting only those who are forcefully under the spell of its digested forms of slavery, or rather oppression, under the mysterious provisions and racist ideologies of white supremacy.
So I asked my students, okay, what happened during Reconstruction right after the Civil War? What went on there? And what happened to me was an aha reaction, or I might better call it an oh no reaction, because 16 out of my 17 students said to me, that's the time when, right after the Civil War, Reconstruction, blacks took over the government of the southern states, but they were too soon out of slavery, and so they screwed up, and white folks had to take control again.
Birth of a Nation,
Birth of a Nation, Gone with the Wind, all rolled into one. And, of course, these are all African-American students. I thought, my gosh, what must they do to you to believe that the one time your group was center stage in American history, they screwed up? Now, it'd be a different matter if this happened, but it didn't happen. This is, in fact, what we in sociology call BS history. That is bad sociology. BS history. That is bad sociology. They started the public school systems for both races. There were scattered schools for white folks, but no system that included the whole state. And, of course, there were no schools at all for black folks. It was illegal, a felony, to teach even free blacks to read and write. So they didn't screw up. So anyway, I went to nearby schools. I watched, and this was just before massive school desegregation, so I watched black teachers teaching all black classes this white supremacist history that was complete BS, because they were just teaching what was in the book.
In my documentary called The Duplicity of the Public School System, I shared much detailed informative information about the pseudoscientific methods utilized by way of college professors, anthropologists, sociologists, and many other correlating co-conspirators in order to teach all people of color, along with non-elite white people, about white supremacy-filled U.S. history, world history, and so-called African-American studies in history, even though there were in fact very few of these scholars that were adamantly opposed to such teachings.
And what, may I ask, is an Aryan? I don't know myself. But let us see what our present so-called authorities have to say about him. They say he is tall, slender, blue-eyed, and blonde. There is no Aryan race. And more important, there is no master race. There are people who may find these ideas convenient, but science cannot support them. There is no scientific proof that there's any correlation between a man's racial characteristics and his native ability or character. In all racial groups, we find the same range of potentialities. We find idiots and geniuses. We find criminals and philanthropists. We must judge each man as an individual and not by the color of his skin or his eyes or by the length of his nose. Come in, gentlemen. It's comfortable. And remember that there is no master race. That is a scientific truth. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying.
Even during the times when the existence of federal laws prevented people of color to learn anything dealing with these foreigners' ambitions, agendas, and even their own propaganda, one must not forget about the year of 1776, when a new sheriff pinned his shiny badge to his chest and a code of conduct was created and implemented into the so-called laws of the lands. I'll be sharing more details about that in a later planned documentary. Now, the next part of this threat is also very noteworthy and critically important to the descendants of the indigenous Aboriginal Niji of this land, Turtle Island, now known as the Americas. Many of you can recall the American Holocaust of 1921, when the U.S. and federal government ordered the bombing of so-called Negro residents and businesses in the Greenwood District of Tulsa, Oklahoma, murdering thousands of people of color and destroying hundreds of their own very prosperous businesses by way of U.S. Army planes, literally dropping bomb after bomb throughout the Greenwood District by way of an executive order called martial law, in which this specific order was created by Congress and President Woodrow Wilson of the Democratic Party before leaving office in March of 1921, and then immediately approved and implemented into law by then President Warren Harding of the Republican Party in May of 1921, just a few days prior to inflicting a deadly Holocaust upon its own American citizens. Now, I originally named my documentary about this The American Holocaust of 1921, and after the documentary accumulated 60,000 views in 4 hours, YouTube removed the video. However, after nearly a month of back and forth, it was placed back on my channel, and it is now called The History of the Negro Wall Street, The Unforgettable Horrific Event of 1921. That is a documentary that I highly recommend for all people to watch. Now, I said all of that to say this. There is a reason why the famous influential activist named Frederick Douglass was able to contribute, quote, tens of thousands of dollars of his own money in order to save the abolishment of all 37 branches of the Freedmen's Savings and Trust Banks that were created by law through then-President Abraham Lincoln on March 3, 1865. And before I state that reason, I want you to note the timeline here. The Civil War began on April 12, 1861, in which history states that the war occurred allegedly due to disagreements between politicians of the North, or rather the Union, and the politicians of the South, or rather the Confederate States, over the abolishment of slavery. However, the truth is that the Civil War was actually about integrating the free enterprise system with more of the indigenous aboriginals of the American lands, being as though many of our ancestors during this time period were not slaves, but rather indentured servants, who were literally sharecroppers that owned farms, banks, and other institutions of business, which in turn allowed both heads of the same snake to acknowledge the fact that our ancestors were rising up as capitalists within this industrialized society. In other words, the Union recognized that the so-called Negroes in the North and the South were rapidly prospering tremendously economically, and they wanted to go into business with them to further their expertise in the free enterprise system. But most politicians of the South disagreed with this notion, being as though it single-handedly threatened the longevity of their not-so-prosperous small to medium-sized businesses. So the Civil War began in April 1861 and completed in May of 1865. Before the Civil War ended, some very important key factors occurred within this timeline. For example,
see, that manipulative lie was told to you as a fear-mongering tactic in order to depict that one race of people are somehow superior to others. When King stated that through an act of Congress, the government was giving away millions of acres of land, he was referring to the Homestead Act of 1862, in which just a little over 30 years prior to this law, our ancestors' cultures, heritage, history, identities, resources, and lands were stripped away and became possessions of the federal government in order to be distributed to the, quote, free whites that immigrated to America from Africa and Europe during the early 1800s.
Which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. Which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor.
The Homestead Act of 1862 granted these white peasants, as King describes, our lands that were stripped from our indigenous ancestors and all of the specialized benefits the federal government promised our ancestors by peace treaties that they would receive for being 90% of the help they needed in order for the United States to win all 61 documented wars that occurred during the 1800s alone. Side note,
The Emancipation Proclamation abolished all forms of slavery the very next year in 1863. The so-called free Negroes and the so-called freed Negroes, along with the so-called freedmen, were royally upset and disgusted with the federal government. So they continued the multiple rebellions until they saw change. The Homestead Act of 1866 was established by the government that allowed the Negro 40 acres and a mule. But the catch was that the Negro had to buy the land, and the price of the lands were lowered just enough so that the Negro cannot afford it still. This is what King meant by America refused to give the Negro any land. These Homestead Acts gave these foreigners government-funded assistance, where the government hired our ancestors to teach these foreigners how to farm.
Not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm, with government money to teach them how to farm.
Because keep in mind, a true foreigner or immigrant wouldn't know how to grow anything in a mass area of land that they are not accustomed with or never inhabited before in their life. This is why King stated, our farms.
They provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms.
Okay, so now, this timeline that I'm referring to begins with the Civil War in April 1861. Then, the first official Homestead Act of 1862. Then, the very next year, the Emancipation Proclamation Bill was implemented into law in 1863, in which that bill alone had absolutely nothing to do with freeing slaves from chains and shackles, like how history so loves to claim. No. In fact, the word emancipate derives from the Latin word emancipatus, which is the process of being set free from legal, social, or political restrictions, which has nothing to do with enslavement. In fact, the Latin word for civil is civilis, which means to affect fellow citizens in a legal or political sense. In other words, the stories of slavery in the Americas did not happen the way we were originally taught by authors of American history and world history. Because once an individual literally researches their family's genealogical background by records, instead of taking the word from some self-proclaimed scholars within their own communities with absolutely no publicly verifiable evidence to manifest, they will be met with the truth that these so-called slaves in America were actually prisoners of war who were contracted as indentured servants by way of industrialism, which also means that your ancestors were sharecroppers, being as though they were the original landowners who were contracted by the tenants, or rather the white colonizationalists who immigrated to North America from Africa and Europe, in which these tenants were allowed to use the sharecroppers' land by contract or treaty in return for a share of the crops produced on the sharecroppers' very own land. But this deal went bad, obviously due to a particular group of people that had a totally different hidden agenda in mind. The next part of this timeline would be President Abraham Lincoln crafting the 40 Acres and a Mule, Field Action 15 in Savannah, Georgia, for the so-called Negro sharecroppers during the months of January and February in the year of 1865, which should immediately indicate to you that the Lincoln administration was willing to work out multiple other economic deals with the complaining indigenous people of North America who were rebelling and raiding multiple territories at this time due to being betrayed and undervalued by both the local and federal governments. So the very next month, in March of 1865, Lincoln was sure to create federal banks for the so-called freedmen that fought on both sides of the American Civil War, along with their descendants.
These banks are known as the Freedmen's Savings and Trust Banks, or the Freedmen's Banks for short, in which over 72,000 accounts were opened, which led these banks to raise a staggering $52 million at that time, which is equivalent to over $100 billion right now, making it the largest grossing bank in American history at that time. Then, the very next month came, and President Abraham Lincoln was assassinated on April 15, 1865, which forced Frederick Douglass to take over the Freedmen's Banks, using tens of thousands of his own sharecropping money, which was a lot of money at that time due to him being a businessman of color, just like millions of our ancestors were. Then, in the year of 1875, after much demand economically, along with well-respected hard work continued to manifest by way of the indigenous aboriginals of this land, Congress passed the first ever civil rights bill in American history, allowing for the white immigrants to go into business with the indigenous businessmen and women of America. Our ancestors were prospering so well that a surge of newly established businesses and banks were rapidly changing the economy on a daily basis, and it also outnumbered the amount of banks owned and operated by whites. This time was uncommonly known as the beginning stages of the Silver Rights Movement, to a point where businesses owned by people of color went from about 3,000 to nearly 60,000 businesses, and the people of color that owned banks went from about 35 banks to nearly 150 banks nationwide from the years of 1875 all the way until the year of 1934, according to the FDIC and the Federal Reserve. Now, so many important events occurred in the year of 1934 alone that I will have to save it for part two of this segment. However, I would like for you to note that people would love to claim that the place called Africa has the most resources ever in history. But if that is the actual truth, then why do you consistently see real Africans immigrating to North America to work at a job or to open up their own business and collect resources from here in America, then publicly inform their friends, colleagues, and co-workers that they are doing this all in order to send it all back to their families who are residing in Africa, literally? See, the answer to that question is very simple, because in today's society, the one set group of people who unknowingly accumulates all of the wealth upon this nation that keeps this country running in the first place but would immediately spread its wealth to everyone under the sun other than themselves, which in turn attracts national and international businesses to their pockets alone, are in fact the so-called African Americans of this country today, which in turn leads you to now know the truth about why multiple economic records would state every single year that so-called African Americans would make up around 1% of America's wealth overall. Purposely telling you the story in reverse in order to hide the truth, making that the real reason why African Americans, or rather the indigenous aboriginals of Turtle Island, are the biggest threat to America's society, but they just don't know it yet.
I'm just here to make you think.
Okay, today's podcast is titled, it's sort of open mic too, Black Folks and the American Dream. So the question of the day, or at least one of them, is, have black folks How are we dealing with the American dream? Once again, as repeated earlier, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when he was president, I think he said the American dream was a house and, what do you call it, a chicken in every pot. So now the American dream probably has morphed into something else. Anyway, let's see, let's go to the lines here. 410, your mic is open.
How you doing, Brother L.A.? And everybody else that's listening? Hotel.
All right. Hotel.
Brother L.A.,
so
I just want to congratulate. Say again?
What do you think? Yeah, I'm listening.
Go ahead.
No, I said I'm listening.
I want to congratulate you and Robin for the past few weeks of really, really heightening my mindset, and really you have going ahead on and giving me optimism for the race. I enjoyed the way you guys was planning and strategizing on how you could get certain projects done in our community and how you were going about plotting plans and laying down actions to build wealth. And even Piarki contributed some worthwhile suggestions during your planning, and I just want to. I really saw how when black folks put their minds together to do something positive, how they can make a difference. And I just want to congratulate you and Robin. And I even want to sprinkle PRK in there on some of the things that you guys have been doing.
Okay, well I definitely appreciate that. I don't know where Robin is today. She was she's 3 hours behind me though.
Well, no, you don't have to appreciate it. I appreciate it. And I hope you guys continue, and you know, you might wanna pass on a little bit of that progress to your cousin here. You know, because it looks like what you're planning is gonna be very fruitful. But look, I wanna get to your subject.
Okay.
And I wanna make sure that I preface it in a very careful way. You know, Francis Cress Wilson used to quote Nellie Fuller. He says, if you don't understand white supremacy, everything else will confuse you. And he was right. And I said that to say this. Black folks is the American dream. We're the reason why the American dream exists, and it still continues today.
Mm.
If it weren't for us laying the foundation for what we call the greatest economy in the world and continuing to be the biggest economy in the world, bar none, even with China being out there and on the horizon, there wouldn't be an American dream. And the thing is, because we have been hoodwinked and the propaganda has confused us, we don't realize, hey, look, we're the reason why this whole democracy and this whole society exists in abundance. So when your title said, is African-Americans part of the American dream, however how you put it,
right,
wouldn't exist without us, brother, and you may not know it, and a bunch of our other listeners may not know it, but just look at what we have contributed and still contributing today. I heard one of your callers call in yesterday and say that our African Americans is only about 4 or 5 have ever earned the Nobel Peace Prize, And my question was, of all of the people that have won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, no, won the Nobel Peace Prize, none have won when it comes to science and stuff like that.
Well, you know, what came to mind to me was black ex-slaves created STEMs in this country. If you look at all of the inventions, those were, and I repeat, those were Nobel Peace Prize worthy inventions. We wouldn't have a modern society on this planet if it hadn't have been for the inventions of black Africans coming out of slavery. Now, I'm willing to debate anybody, and I'll lay my facts on the table, and they lay their facts on the table, and I doubt if they can repudiate or refute, I guess that's the right word, anything that I lay out there. All you got to do is just look at what we enjoy today, and they are Nobel Peace Prize worthy findings. Now, just because somebody don't get an award don't mean that they haven't done something worthy of an award. And,
true.
You know, hey, we can debate that. So now, you know, I just want to throw that out there. And what you just played a few minutes ago, we need to take that crap and flush it down the damn toilet because it just confuses people. But the thing is, I just want to put it out there that because we don't know who we are, we don't concentrate on who we are, and we don't go in and practice self-preservation and survival of the fittest to make sure that we do those things that we need to survive as a species. That's the reason why we're in the shape we're in. And furthermore, you had something yesterday. I tried to text something in to you, but I guess everything I text to you has been blocked. But the thing is, I was texting you some things to let you know that, hey, you know, the thing is, identity says it all. When you don't have an identity, you don't have a reason to do anything to ensure your survival. And when you ensure your survival, it means that you plan and you strategize like y'all have been doing for the past several weeks to do things to make things better for your existence. And because we don't have an identity, and you know black folks think it's real cute when they say black folks are not a monolith or we all don't think alike. Well, when you nationalize yourself and you come up with a code of conduct and a code of ethics like the Constitution, that puts you in a mindset. Now, you may have subgroups, but the thing is it organizes all of your efforts, and it makes sure that all of your efforts ensure the survival of a species or your race or your community. And because we have been hoodwinked into not organizing around our identity, like you guys have been organizing around whatever you need and what it takes to build wealth for these past several weeks, then you get the kind of mess that we're in now. So I just wanted to throw that out there, and I want to congratulate you.
Well, yeah, yesterday we, and I like what you said, black folks are the American dream. I like the way you put that. Well, yeah, yesterday the topic was tribes, tribalism, and identity marketing. So I put that out there, and I guess we can put it out here too. First, all right, like you say, Latinos have organized around or identify around a language, Spanish.
Exactly.
Now, let me put it out here if I failed to do this yesterday. Reason why I did yesterday's podcast by that title, Tribes, Tribalism, Identity Marketing, is because I've got a friend of mine. She's been on here before. She's black female, and she and her brother, they do mobile homes. You don't see a whole lot of black people living in mobile homes, but overwhelmingly, the majority of people that live in mobile home communities are white. In any event, so she and her brother do mobile homes, and then there are two other black couples that do mobile homes, but they're doing it from the ownership or entrepreneurial point of view, okay, or aspect. Now, one of the things I noticed was that all three of these people do interviews with people that have taken, because all three have their own courses. If you want to learn about mobile homes, they have their own courses and whatnot. So I've noticed that overwhelmingly the people that they interview are black people. I would say, and one of them, they give bus tours to black, well, they'll give it to anybody now. But the people who are taking them up on offer, I mean, these are paid bus tours, but have been black people. So I haven't noticed in any of the interviews except for maybe one or two instances where they have interviewed somebody black. So I call, I mean white. So I called a friend of mine that I know. Matter of fact, we spoke yesterday afternoon. And, you know, I just told her what I observed, and I was asking, you know, what about white students? So she gave me an example. She had asked this particular person who happened to be white to do an interview for concerning mobile homes. Now, and she doesn't get into anything with politics, race, religion, none of that. Her whole thing is mobile homes, on how you can make some money with mobile homes. That's her thing. That's all of them, all three of them. So she asked this white girl, you know, hem and hawed, and then canceled things. Then she finally said yes. They set up a time, and then right before she was about to interview this lady who happened to be white, she canceled on her. All right? Now, an hour later, within that hour of her canceling, another person called her, who happened to be white, called up and said, I'm doing a Zoom call, and we're going to be talking about mobile homes. They, you know, have a panel. So time for the Zoom call, and there are four people on the panel, and one of the people happened to be the white woman who turned down her interview less than an hour, you know, from the time that she was supposed to actually do it. So that guy, because I was thinking, now I'm not even going on a race issue here. This is why I use the word tribe and tribalism and identity marketing yesterday. Fred Price, the late Fred Price, several years ago, and you can probably find a sermon, I mean, he's got a gazillion of them on YouTube, where he used to get invited to churches to speak, as pastors often do. And he would get invited. He was invited to this mega church, you know, televangelist. And the thing that Fred Price noticed is that when he invited these same white televangelists to come and speak at his church in Los Angeles, California, Crenshaw Christian Center, for some reason, they wouldn't come, or find some reason that they couldn't, you know, booking their schedule or whatever. Now, you know, maybe things changed, but I remember him saying that. And then shortly thereafter, Fred Price came out with a piece of work, which you can still probably purchase to this day, Race, Racism, and Religion. So I'm thinking, okay, because I had an experience where within the last week or so, this week, where, well, no, it is another incident that I may as well put it out here since I was explaining the title from yesterday, which we're picking back up today. I was doing some radio programs, and I wanted to expand to more than one radio. Actually, I was working on expanding to a third station. All right, so I contacted this radio station, which I think was in Annapolis, Maryland, and the station manager, I guess that's what you call him, said, well, you know, we need to see your bank statement. I supplied him with a bank statement. Then he said, you need to supply us with another bank statement. I showed him two bank statements. And these are bank statements that were current, and I have relationships of over 2 years with both of these banks. Then I went to them again to buy time, and it was another hurdle. So I was frustrated by this time, but I didn't say nothing to him. So I called a friend of mine from high school, and he shared two stories with me. One was he was throwing a party at his house. Now, he lives when he was growing up, he lived in the Montgomery County suburb of Washington, D.C., overwhelmingly white, but he was pretty popular, and he had friends across the spectrum, black friends, Asian friends, and white friends, okay? So he was throwing a party, so when it time for the party to happen, the only people that showed up were black people. He shared that story with me, but then he shared with me a more interesting story, okay, because he's a musician too, where he said that at that time, things probably could have changed by now, but at this time, this goes back 15, 20 years, where actually all white, and he was because he's a guitar player, okay, that he applied, you know, auditioned for, he didn't get the job. But every black band that he auditioned for, just one time off the cuff, he got the job. So, and you know, give me a spill behind that. So from that point on, when it came to radio stations, this is pre-internet, back in the 80s. Every station I went to that was run by black people, I had no problem buying advertising. Not any problem, but the two or three stations that I attempted to go to that were run by white people, although their market, the people that they were selling to, were black, but they were running the station, I couldn't get into those stations. So instead of putting out the race card and saying is they were racist, I'm looking at my life experiences, too. This is just L.A. I'm looking at, you know what? People are tribal. They're tribal. They do business with, they socialize with people who they, and I thought about you, Beasley, identify you. And matter of fact, Beasley, the only thing I got from you yesterday as far as a text was the word test. I don't know what else you sent, but that's the only thing I got my message yesterday. But anyway, so I thought about you, and that's why I named yesterday's podcast Tribes, Tribalism, and Identity Marketing, because I'm thinking about what I'm doing is, you know what, maybe the person that they need to talk to is not me, but somebody that they can identify with. And I shared another story of another friend I went to college with. He's been on here 3-4 times. And he shared a story about, and I told this yesterday, I'm going to repeat it again today. When this was back in the early 80s when he was in Texas and he was selling cable television. So he got a setup inside of Walmart. and his sales were so-so. So then he got the idea to partner up with another person, and this person happened to be white. When he brought the white person on, the sales for cable television zoomed. He might have two customers, but his partner might have 10 or 11, and they're standing in the line waiting. So he had to adjust the idea, but he had to remember the bottom line was money. Now, I talked to this same friend of mine yesterday. I called him yesterday also. And his wife is a real estate agent, been a real estate agent for 20 years. And I just happened to ask, because typically I don't even get into the race thing, but you can't identify, I mean, you can't deny identity. You can't deny it. So he said, basically her clients run, and she's a black woman. Her clients are essentially two types of people, black folk looking for homes or Latinos looking for homes. And they live in the Dallas metro area in Texas. So that's why I named yesterday, because a lot of times when people say race or racism, that stops them, because I'm looking at, because a lot of the people that have been contacting me are people, they're budget conscious, but the people that they're used to speaking to are, they identify with somebody that doesn't sound like me, because they don't know what I look like, that doesn't sound like me, and more than likely doesn't look like me. So I figure, all right, let me tweak my marketing based on the identity of this particular tribe that this person might be coming looking for housing to me. So that's why I named yesterday's program Tribes, Tribalism, and Identity Marketing. Anyway, that's my rant on that title.
Well, look, Brother L.A., I mean, sometimes I go back to what he said. He said, if you can't understand white supremacy, everything else will confuse you. Now, look, we often talk about a wolf pack, don't we?
We sure do.
Have you ever seen a pack of foxes hunt with a pack of wolves?
Nope.
I've heard of it.
Nope.
Now, they're the same species.
Yeah, they're dogs.
The thing
they're canines.
Is,
yeah, they're canines.
They're canines. But what I'm telling you is that, hey, look, they have their own pack to do what they need to do to survive. And they have their own, for lack of a better term, look, culture is nothing but instinct. They have their own instinct on what they need to do to make sure that they can get the game they need or hunt and do what they need to do. Now, look,
right.
Humans are not that far advanced over animals, mammals. They're both mammals, but the species are different. But now, what I'm telling you is this. You're right. When you go in a crowded room of mixed groups, you can have Asians over here, you can have whites over here, blacks over here, Latinos over here, and I swear they'll separate themselves according to the group that they're identified with. Happens every time. Every now and then you'll see somebody mingle into that group, but most of the time you know if you're black, you're not wanted in either one of those groups. And all I'm telling you is we're the only people that will deny our identity and work against any cause that our identity try to go in and formulate. And all I'm telling you is this. Now, don't get me wrong. I've been in business several businesses.
Right.
The only way you can do this thing, you have to be big enough and strong enough to say, hey, have what everybody needs. And the thing is, You have to be strong enough and big enough to make sure that, hey, look, you can outcompete anybody else, which you can do that.
Right.
But where we get confused at is that we think we can join in with anybody for their cause. Everybody else has an ulterior motive, and that's survival of the fittest and self-preservation. See, we don't deal with that. We'll buy from any damn body. We'll go ahead on instead of us, a group of us getting together and buying land like you've been talking about, 40 or 50 acres of land, and then subdivide it into a subdivision. We want to move into an established neighborhood by another ethnic group. Now, I tried to send you something a couple of weeks ago. The Latinos had a conference called Latitude, where mm-hmm. they're consolidating the political power, the economic power, and any social activity that they, any social organization that they need to form for their protection. And the thing is this, they also said, hey, we're going to formulate this thing around us. But now there are certain partnerships we need to establish, but in order to establish them, we have to put ourselves in a certain position. We never think about that. See, we like to join stuff if you're a conservative, if you're in the conservative movement, see, you want to go in there and fit in. They're talking about being a conservative, but the thing is, only if it's a means to an end, if it gives them an advantage. They wants to be liberal, but they wants to be liberal if it gives them an advantage around the ethnic group, which is organized around a language. Now, look, we say, well, you know, black folks are different. They think different. Yeah, you damn right we do. But here's the thing about them. They come from different regions in the Caribbean, South America, Central America, anywhere else. They speak Spanish. They speak different dialects. Mm-hmm. But because they, the importance of survival in this country and on the planet, they're able to come together and formulate a strategy based on them having to speak Spanish and based on their ethnic group. But you can't get us to do that. If I'm a conservative, look, the only time we identify with black and you're a Republican is white folks tell you you're a black conservative. God damn it. You don't say conservative. They tell you you're a black conservative, which means you're different. The only mm-hmm. time we identify with black as a liberal, we identify, and look, liberals don't even say black. They say people of color to identify that they're different from a regular liberal.
Right. See?
And the thing is, all the other people, identity trumps everything that they do, religion, economics, politics, you have it. Hey, look, we speak Spanish. We're Latinos. We're Puerto Ricans. We're Guatemalans, but the thing is, in order for us to survive out here and have the numbers, we have to coordinate ourselves according to as a group and as an ethnic group. And see, that's where we get confused. And the thing is, not only do we get confused, we get used because of stupidity. See, we want to join everything else. If I'm a Catholic, I'm a black Catholic. But the thing is, I can't associate with the African Methodist Episcopal Zion because, you know, I belong to the Catholic Church. I'm black, both of us black, but we can't come together for a common cause. And the thing is, that's where we got screwed up at. And until we work that out, you can market it anywhere you want to. In fact, I had a problem when I first opened up the store in Baltimore.
I'm glad you brought it up. Now, Sharon, what demographically, what kind of neighborhood was it in? I have an idea, but I'm not sure.
Here's what I did, Brother L.A. I stumbled on it by accident, but I didn't buy the place until I looked at the demographics.
Okay.
A certain zip code. That zip code has 76% black in that demographic. That's why I put the store there. But now there was a Korean right down the street from him. He was making money hand over fist. When we first started, they wanted to know if Koreans owned the store we were just working for.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife made the mistake and said, no, we own it. And the thing is, it took us a couple of years to build up the clientele. But once we build up the clientele, number one, we had a clean, competitive-looking place. And that's been the formula for my family. The other thing is we gave good customer service. We took a lot of shit, excuse the expression.
Well, that's what it takes for good customer service.
We had a competitive price. Nobody could beat our price. And we were open all hours of the night, all hours of the day. And the thing is, we outcompeted them. Now, they still got their share. But we cut into their market share tremendously. In fact, they wanted to buy me out, but I wouldn't sell it to them. But I'm just showing you what you're dealing with. See, lack of an identity and a lack of pride in your identity. And the other thing is your education process. See, those people educate their people on survival of the fittest and self-preservation. See, they have their own little schools where they let them know, hey, look, you're Latino. And these are the things that you have to do in order to be a good Latino. See, we don't have that as being a good black or either a bad black. See, the thing is, and protecting one another. See, we'll destroy one another for another ethnic group. And that's where we fuck up that, excuse the expression. And until you get that done.
Matter of fact, I'm glad you shared that story with us with, you know, it was a convenience store that you and your wife had, right?
Yeah, a little corner store, yeah.
Right. There was, it was on New Hampshire Avenue, not too far over the district line in PG County, Maryland. There was a restaurant that I used to go to every blue moon. I haven't had one in God knows. I haven't had a pork chop dinner in probably 10 years. But, you know, a few times a year I would like to go into this place. It was a soul food restaurant right outside of Washington, D.C. called Pops and Son. And typically when you were going Pops and Sons, and Pop had bought, the building that he had bought was it used to be a Arby's. Not Arby's. One of those things, Roy Rogers or Arby's or something like that. One of these brand name things. Anyway, they went out of business there, and Pops bought the building. Had a nice size. It was a great location on New Hampshire Avenue. Plenty of traffic going by it all hours of day and night. Nice size parking lot to accommodate and all that. But most of the times that you went in there, and Pops was black. I never saw the Sons around there, but that's what he named the restaurant, Pops and Sons. So there was hardly anybody in the restaurant when I went in there. And sometimes I walk in there and I'm the only customer. So one day I was on my way to somewhere out in Maryland. On New Hampshire Avenue, guess headed to Silver Spring or someplace like that. And I look over to, and that was this evening now, so I look over to the left, you know, I wasn't planning on going to Pops, but I looked over and I noticed, I was at the traffic light, I noticed Pops, the parking lot of Pops was jam-packed. So I said, damn, what's happening at Pops? Ain't been like this before. I've been going over there for years. So I doubled back and went into Pops. Now, mind you, I didn't even look at the sign. I went into Pops full of black folk. No white people in there, no Native, all black people. And then I looked up front. And Pops, and I noticed the name change, and I noticed that Pop wasn't there, and Koreans had taken over. And I said, what in the hell? Where were all these people all these years when Pop was up his making me a soul pot with pork chop dinner? I didn't buy
nothing.
A friend of mine. A friend of mine told me. They got three of them in the area now, but I'm gonna have to call them up and find out the name. But I just turned around. I didn't order nothing, and walked out in disgust.
I did the same thing. Look, it wasn't Pops, but I was coming from a festival.
Uh-huh.
And I had a flat tire because I used to transport all of my stuff in my van, in a work mm-hmm. van. I bought a work van. And I saw all of these black folks lined up on Glen Burnie Road. And I saw, and look, these black folks had just come from church. They
yeah.
were dressed up. They had a line all the way back, all around the building. And I had called up rural service to come and get me, you know, bring me a tie and fix my tie for me. And I told my wife, I said, look, let's go over here. There's got to be something mighty good over there. It was a restaurant. I said, it's got to be something mighty good over there because them black folks is lining up. I mean, it was all over, stumbling all over each other. And I said, well, the guy told me it was going to take maybe an hour, 2 hours for him to get to me where I was.
Right.
And I said, why don't we go there and eat? And I told the guy, I said, look, when you get to where my van is, you call me. I'll be across the street. We stood in line, I know, for about an hour or so. And, you know, you can smell the food in there.
Right.
And when I got up to where the food was, it was Koreans. I said, baby, you know, I ain't going to do no shit like this. And my wife, you know, you don't eat them, and you're probably disgusted with people that do eat them. But my wife loved chitlins, and they had chitlins in there.
I haven't had chitlins in decades.
Yeah.
But some of the places I go to, they sell them.
Yeah, well, my wife said, ain't no way in the hell I'm going to eat anything here, especially them damn chitlins, because I don't even eat chitlins if black folks clean them, and I know damn well I ain't going to eat them if a Korean is cleaning them. But now, I will say this. There are some black folks in the back there cooking.
I'm glad you said that, because the majority of Koreans, Asian places that I've gone to, the Asians will be at the cash register, but we're the ones in the back cooking the food.
Yeah. But we are a white folks' creation. They created us to be servants and slaves. They created us this way. They took all of the things that it takes to be a tribe. And look, a tribe ain't nothing but what? A tribe ain't nothing but an organized group. A tribe
get together around some type of commonality, common bond. And that can be different things.
Identify. And they have rules to help them protect themselves and rules to help them progress and everything else. So, and when I heard you talking about that yesterday, I said, wait a minute, you don't understand what a tribe is. Look, a nation ain't nothing but a tribe of people that agrees on an identity and what it takes for that identity to survive, self-preservation, and survival of the fittest. That's all it is. It just so happens. America is an experiment where a lot of different tribes can come in here and do what they need to do to survive and thrive. And the thing is, you can do this in America if first you lay the foundation around your identity. Now, you can do, look, America is the American dream, and it was created on our backs. But if you organize around your tribe or your identity, hell, you can control every damn thing. But the key thing is, we haven't formed an identity, and everybody else has. Everybody else has an identity in America except black folks. And the first thing you say is, who is the we? Well, goddammit, if you don't know who the we is, you just need to put a gun to your head and blow your damn brains out, because we're treated as a we. Kill indiscriminately white folks Asians, Arabs, and other ethnic groups, Hispanics. They just don't do it. Now, don't get me wrong. Everything is not 100%, but look.
Right.
Like, I'm watching this thing in Chicago right now, that little Hispanic boy that got killed by police, unarmed. I'm watching to see how this come out. Look, other ethnic groups don't have to worry about having a certification to say that, hey, look, you'll be going to be able to vote and vote in peace.
Mm-hmm.
What is it called? The Voters Act or some stuff like that. But now, Voters Rights Act, FRA. See, nobody else has to go through this every 7 years. Nobody else has to go to court, and you automatically get the harshest sentence on the planet. They just don't do that. So we can't see the forest for the trees. But all I'm telling you is, look, you can out-compete these people. Because, look, everybody buys soul music. Everybody buys rap. Everybody buys jazz. But
right.
The thing is, it's very unique, and nobody else can do it any better than we can. And it's the biggest export on the planet. So once you have something unique to your identity, yeah, you can cross over, as they say, in the music business. But the thing is, it's got to be something that nobody else can do or nobody else has. Now they're just catching up with it now, where you got some white boys sound just like black folk. But all I'm telling you is that the lack of identity and the lack of tribe, if you want to call it that, is the reason why we're in the shape we're in, and that's why it was so impressive to see how you and Robin was going ahead on and developing a strategy to build wealth and to go in and do other projects.
And Pianchi yesterday brought up, he always makes a good point, but he brought up, he identified a tribe that I can relate to, that I will I've dealt with them before, but was not on purpose. But now, on purpose, I'm going to deal with this particular tribe and single mothers with children. That's the particular tribe that I'm going for. With the talks that you've heard us, me and Robin, talk about over the last week or so. Because when he brought that up, that sort of got my sanity back, because but you're right. Everybody identifies with something. And like I brought up yesterday, most people belong to one tribe, more than one tribe or whatever. But,
Hold it. Correction.
Okay.
But the ethnic group overrides the subgroup. Yeah, everybody identifies with something. Look, in the Hispanics, they got different gangs. They got different ways of eating. They got different ways of worshiping, but it doesn't override the umbrella that they operate under. Look, you got white folks that's Catholics and Protestants and Democrats and Republicans, but nothing overrides the white identity. See, you can operate as an individual in this thing, and you're
right.
Going to prosper in this thing as long as you operate under the umbrella. And I hear your point. Yeah. Do you know what? Here where I'm at, there's a guy that deals with black single mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making money hand over fist. He makes about $30,000 a month.
Okay.
One check. Tell you how he does it? Section 8. He has a trailer park that brings him $30,000 a month.
You know,
because
you are the second person. She's been on here before, Kelly. One of the people I talked to yesterday, black, I told you, she and her brother, they're both black. They do mobile homes. She does Section 8 with mobile homes. You're the second person that brought that up.
Doesn't have to run them down for your rent. Whenever they tear up something, you go back to their casework and tell them what it is. When you fix it, they give you a check. But that's the subgroop of our community.
Well, you're right. That is a subgroup.
That's right. So now the thing is, yeah, you're describing them as a tribe, but what they are, they're under an umbrella. They're black, he's black, and the thing is, he's providing them nice, affordable housing and clean housing, and he makes sure he takes care of everything. All they have to do is buy their groceries. And I got news for you. Adjacent to the trailer park. So if they need something.
Yeah, catch all those dollars so they ain't got to drive far.
The dollars never leave, except when they go to the bigger grocery store. Okay. So, so now, yeah, I understand what you said. And he was right. But it doesn't trump the overall umbrella of identity. So, yeah, that's a good market that you're going to go in. And I looked at your, you said you was in Hamilton County.
Yeah, Florida. Hamilton County, Florida, yeah.
I looked at the demographics. Your demographics is an identity to the county that I'm in.
Okay.
And the thing is, most of your population is there, what, in Jensen, the town of Jasper, Jensen, or what the hell is
it? Yeah, well, I'm in Jasper, but I think there's a town named Jensen, whatever. Typically, when I go up in that neck of the woods, I go up I-75, turn off on Jasper, and then roll around in my place because it's straight up rural.
Well, the majority of your population.
Yeah, then I just get out of Dodge after that, yeah.
Well, the majority of your population is in Jasper, but I don't know where that 4 acres is where you're located and where it's located adjacent to Jasper. But, you know, the first thing I do is I look at the demographics. I look at the zip code, and I look at where the majority of black folks are because that's all I've ever catered to. Everything I've ever sold are catered to them. And the thing is, if I'm selling food, then it ain't no problem. I sell to anybody. But my foundation is where the majority of my people are. And if I just happen to get some outside group to come in and buy something, so be it, you know. But
right.
The thing is, I'm going where the numbers are. And I'm going to cater to where the numbers are. But I don't depend on going to a Korean community or a white community or Arab community because I know, based on facts and findings, they're going to support their own. Now, I might be able to get some of that.
For instance, now, yeah, matter of fact, we all can identify with Asian businesses, let's say just for sake of ease, and there's no shortage of Chinese restaurants in black neighborhoods, or really any neighborhood, but in this case I'm going to say black because I'm in a majority white neighborhood where I'm at, hands down mostly white. However, Koreans are here, or Vietnamese, whatever. They're selling Chinese food, and there's four restaurants around me. None of them are going broke. Let me say this.
Yeah,
I've never seen a black soul food restaurant visibly operated by black folk in a Asian neighborhood. Never seen it.
But yes, you have. But look, L.A., when you go to a Chinese restaurant, what's on their menu? American cuisine.
Well, in this country, they basically Americanized their menu based on what Americans like. Oh, wait a minute. Let me put on my D.C. and Baltimore hat. If I go to a Chinese carryout in Washington, D.C., or Baltimore, Maryland, in the black parts of town, okay, which the economic spectrum runs the gamut because everybody ain't poor. You got some wealthy black folks in both of those towns. But if I look at the menu, I'm going to see wings, and there are two places I know of in D.C. where, matter of fact, this is in southeast D.C., over in the Anacostia area. There's a place, if you go there Monday through Friday, Korean-owned. They're a convenience store, but they sell breakfast in the morning, hot breakfast. The line
That's
is
right.
out the door.
That's right.
And it's selling
That's right.
soul food breakfasts. Grits,
but
salmon cakes, you name it, they
right.
got it.
That's right. That's right.
Also, the black people are the ones that are cooking, but it's the Koreans that own the store and at the cash register.
And let me give you this, Brother L.A. What do the majority of black folks order out of a Chinese restaurant?
Oh, shit, man. Well, I'll tell you what I order. could be boneless spare ribs. It could be I love sesame chicken, egg foo young, egg rolls. You know, that's the usual fare I get.
You don't order shrimp fried rice, beef fried rice, fried rice?
I order shrimp fried rice damn near every time.
Yeah, chicken, shrimp fried rice. And look, I will get an egg roll every now and then. And look, whatever else is what is it? Shish kebab, what is it? Chicken on a stick?
Oh, I know you're talking. I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah. Shrimp fried rice and an egg roll, that's standard for me.
Exactly.
You know, the Szechuan chicken or beef or whatever the 100-plus items they got, but the first things out of my mouth, shrimp fried rice and egg roll.
That's right.
That's me. Then I order other things on top of that.
That's soul food. And look, here's the other thing. If I do get into vegetables, it's, what do you call it, broccoli that's cooked along with cauliflower, what the hell it is. All of
it is American. They got pepper steak. They got different dishes with broccoli. I'm sure you heard it. That's why I was talking about modeling your business. And you and your wife did that with your convenience store, is if you look at the menu or what the items that you and your wife sold out of that convenience store, y'all didn't depend on one, two, or three items. I know, probably had over 200, maybe 300 items that you sold.
More than that.
Okay.
Because when I scale a store, I had the minimum amount that I make a day has to pay for the, in the case of Baltimore, the mortgage, the light bill,
right,
the water, and, any miscellaneous. Now, anything over there, and look, the resupply, but I had to have enough items in there to make sure that I could pay that even if I had a bad day. So that's the
right direction. Basically, let me get to this other caller because I don't want to run out of time.
I got another phone call, but I just wanted to chime in on that, and I'm quite sure I rubbed some people the wrong way, and I'm glad that I did. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Beasley. Pianki, your mic is open.
LA, you never get nothing done talking to people who don't get nothing done themselves. You got to keep moving, man.
Well, how are you today, sir? Yeah, I heard you.
You know, and it's going to be you and the ones that you work with. That's your we. Ain't no such thing as a whole bunch of we's. And as far
and
as...
You're,
and
you
see,
know
I don't
what,
work
you're
with
absolutely
people.
Right. That's
anytime somebody diss me, and anybody else, you don't fool with them people anymore. They've already showed their hand. Would you say?
Yeah. And I agree with you 100%. The only we that counts are the people that you're directly working with.
I erected bridges in multi-story buildings. You think I could have just done that to black folks for blacks?
No, you would have been starving.
Thank you.
Matter of
so
fact, it'll be worse than you not starving if you depended on that.
Yeah, so you know what I talked to you about yesterday? You should get started on that. And what you're going to have to do, too, and don't forget, you're going to have to sell your idea to the people there next to you. Because if they don't want it or if they despise it, it won't be too good of an idea. You know that, don't you? That's the same thing.
You got a good point. You got an excellent point.
If I build a shopping mall, it's got to be sold to that community. if they don't want it. Nothing worse than trying to go into a community and do something without getting the approval of the community.
Now,
only place
the
that
line
you can do that is in black folks, in the Negro community.
The line of work that you were doing, number one, it's more than speculation. I imagine you didn't run into too many other people that look like you, for number one.
No.
Number two, you had to be exceptional at what you did.
My reputation preceded me.
Right.
Matter of fact, I had
and it didn't matter what you looked like because you had an excellent reputation and you delivered on your product.
Yeah, like that. Like earlier, you had, you know, you have so many of them skits, you can't keep up with them. I would advise you to do one or two, then talk about it. Because when you run four, five, six skits out of them, people don't forget about it. But early on, you had a lady on there talking about racism and stuff. That's a bunch of bull. That's about 85% bull crap what she was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this stuff about you don't have to be, your identity is your people and your crew, which may be anybody. By the way, there's a restaurant down here in
what about, like, now yesterday, and I agree with you, what about all right, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but I'm talking about looking at the other side of the coin is, like you mentioned yesterday, and I can relate to it, selling to, single parents and kids.
Well, yeah, if that'll work, and like the lady was talking about, the guy that's doing the Section 8 with trailers, that's good for
right.
somebody. I wouldn't mess with nothing like that, though. That's not for me. But
right.
That's for somebody who wants to do that. And it's just like, hey, I know some people that do waterproofing on commercial building. That's not for me. I know some people that do cleanup. Hire laborers, and they bid to do the cleanup, which is very simple on construction projects. That's not for me. I'm long gone. I'm the first one there, and not the last one to leave, unless I had to come back and install something that we couldn't install because others had to get their work in. Everybody works off of what I erect, so. In order to avoid what's called liquidated damages, that what you did wrong would cause this person to do wrong, the next craft to do wrong, the next craft, I had to have mine damn near perfect. Because that's just the way things roll.
Now, what you're coming when you had a stroke, I mean, now, I have an idea of the kind of work you did, building and whatnot. But did you have a sales team? I mean, how did you get the job?
Job to go out on for bid. Project
okay.
go out for bid. And you aware of what's going on. General contractors would send you invitations.
Mm-hmm.
To bid. If I formed a team, if I bid to supply and erect, then I had to work with a fabricator, which I had one or two. I tried working with this other one black guy that tried to be a fabricator. He didn't know what the hell he was doing. He sent stuff out wrong. He sent it out wrong, and I had to rework it. I'm going to charge the hell out of it, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't just because I'm doing it. It's just because what it costs.
Well, you helped me with a reframe. I like the way you put that, your team. Because I'm just thinking, when you think in terms of teams, you go with the best people that work with you.
My crews consist of about 96% white males that knew me or knew of me. And quit where they was working and came to work for me. So your last call is what he's talking about. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I get sick and tired of hearing all this shit sometimes. It's inaccurate. I told you what it is. You draw that line in the ground, and you're scared to step over it yourself, even though you drew it. You were making reference about what banks don't do. Hell, I had money in Bank of America, and if they're not going to do something, they're not going to do it. I financed a house. I could have bought it, paid cash for it, and they said they basically didn't want to get involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
Word got out that I was looking for to get into a home market, and I had at least three banks was calling me up every day. U.S. Bank, PNC, and I'm not nothing special. They that's what they do. I mean, there's a lot of people got way more money.
Well, they were competing for they wanted your business.
Yeah, and they wanted to do it, but Bank of America didn't want to do it. That's just something that they didn't do. That's just the way it is. Even though you have several accounts in it, if they don't want to do it. I had another, when I was had in business, another bank I went to was called Boatman's. And they sat down and talked, but they just didn't want to do it. They didn't want to get involved in that. That's just not their cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
My former commercial banker, and you know this stuff too, talking about blacks built America. I mean, slaves didn't build no America. That's a bunch of hogwash. Many people contribute to the nation. Ain't no one ethnic group. Well, I tell you what, I have to pull back on that because whites have contributed the most.
The Italians did. A lot of Chinese did.
Yeah, and they considered white. On the thing with the Nobel Peace Prize, you've only had about three or four in the whole world that, and I think that's what I was looking at, but the Black Prizes, Nobel Prizes, was in peace, not the other areas.
Martin Luther King. I don't know if Mandela won one. Well, yeah, Mandela won one.
Toni Morrison in literature.
Okay.
Now, see, here's the thing. Why would people even argue about that? That ain't no argument. Because if you look at your education system, they complain about that all the time. Well, is not one related to the other? And then, like they say, that blacks wasn't allowed to go to school. Well, that's not true neither. Because if you had 21 that I could identify, black scientists that participated in the Manhattan Project. What year was that?
I had to look that up. You know, okay, I've heard of it, but I don't.
1940. Early
1940. Okay.
All right. They were what? Nuclear physicists? Chemists. They were in those specialized
areas. Yeah, nuclear
areas.
Weapons. Yeah, I'm looking at
yes.
it now.
In science.
Yeah, the Manhattan Project was a research and development undertaken during World War II that produced the first nuclear weapons.
Yes. Now, check this out. These people was in their 30s and 40s, maybe some a little bit older. So what year did they go to school?
Well, they had to go, they had to go to 10 years before that. 10, 15
some
years
20
40.
Years before that. They were going to school in the 20s.
Right.
So you got to listen carefully what people are saying. You really don't have to listen carefully because they're going to throw something. Like that little kid talked about the Wall Street. There wasn't no black Americans. It was native. Those were Creek Indians that owned that land. Now, you had some blacks that probably came in. You had blacks that came in from in some Chicago projects I know of who was already learned on building more than one-story structures, and they came in and worked. Well, they needed labor, and they came in and worked. Now, who owned the businesses, the buildings that they was built? I know who owned the land. They probably owned the businesses, too, because they was very wealthy. Creek Indians was wealthy. Saying that the United States Army dropped bombs on, that's not true. No Army dropped no bomb. Them planes, what kind of planes were they using in World War One? It didn't look like them. People
no,
don't use no damn common sense.
Well,
there were gasoline bombs people were throwing out the window. It was an act of criminality. They probably came out of Arkansas. That's where they probably came out.
Distinction. I think we need to cover it. Black Wall Street, although they call it that, but you're right. A lot of people, a lot of those people were Native Americans.
Yeah, they were. They
but
were.
What a lot of us do, a lot of us, what we do in this current time is we look at, we try to blanket everybody based on skin tone. But a lot of people, to this
and
day,
it gets lighter and lighter all the time.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Pionk, before, you know, because we're like way over time. It's 6 after 1. We're going to pick this back up tomorrow. Everybody have
a
good
you need to go ahead and work on what I was talking to you about yesterday.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting ready to work on. That's my,
all right,
that's
I might
my
call you and tell you, give you, so you save money on the front end and what
okay,
you need
well,
to do.
Okay, well, you got all my numbers.
I got your numbers. All right.
Yeah, you got the best one to call is on the house phone. All right.